Many African farmers still use traditional seeds. Some farmers in South Asian countries might be using older generation improved seeds, despite there being new varieties that are better protecting them against droughts or floods. Thus, there's still potential here, even if sometimes that means just getting already existing but newer varieties into the hands of farmers.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. More resilient seed varieties can help small farmers enormously, but how do we encourage them to adopt those new types of seeds? The standard approach in low-income countries is to send out government agents, and they work with a select group of farmers, and we hope that they help spread the word. But is there a better way? Kyle Emmerich of Tufts University is one of a team of researchers whose work suggests there may be. And he joins me now. Welcome to Vox Dev Talks, Kyle.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me.
We've covered agricultural extension, as it's called, a few times on Vox Dev Talks, but I guess it's important to re-emphasize why better seeds, better distribution of those seeds too, can improve yields and livelihoods for farmers as a result. What is the potential impact here? What's the win?
Tim, the Green Revolution gives us one historical example of how improved seeds can increase agricultural productivity. The development and release of modern seed varieties during the second half of the 20th century kind of transformed agriculture in some countries. And actually, recent work by Doug Gollin, Casper Worm-Hansen, and Asger Wingenzer finds that improved varieties from the Green Revolution era increase yields by around 44%.
Wow.
So there's that number you asked about. Mm-hmm. And this is not at all a small number, right? But one may then wonder if there's any future potential for improved seeds given these impressive numbers. And one striking thing is that the benefits of that first Green Revolution were very uneven over space. Mm-hmm. For instance, many African farmers still use traditional seeds. Some farmers in South Asian countries might be using older generation improved seeds, despite there being new varieties that are better protecting them against droughts or floods. Thus, there's still potential here, even if sometimes that means just getting already existing but newer varieties into the hands of farmers.
And was I correct when I described the standard way to get those new varieties into the hands of farmers, the way that they're adopted? What happens?
Yes, you were correct, which is nice. In a single year, countries often release many new varieties of a particular crop. Mm-hmm. Then the Public Agricultural Extension Service is tasked with getting information to farmers about these varieties. And as you mentioned, public agricultural extension agents act as the intermediaries to spread knowledge. And they do so by conducting demonstrations, trials, and they do these things with their selected contact farmers. The contact farmers are usually selected as people who are most willing to try new things and who might be in the best position to get the word around. For instance, Tim, if you were known as a farmer that is open-minded to trying new things and who other farmers look to for information, then the Government Extension Service may go to you each year to try out new things and to tell others. And again, the logic behind this system is that farmers rely on each other for information. Farmers prefer to hear about new seeds or production techniques from someone who's tried them and can share that experience.
You put those two things together. Are we realizing this potential? How successful is this method at getting the word out, spreading the information, changing behavior for farmers? It sounds like there's some ground to make up.
Indeed, that's the case. There are a few practical challenges that come along with this approach. And the first has to do purely with scale. The number of farmers per agricultural extension worker is usually in the hundreds or even thousands. Thus, extension workers must really strategize on who they talk to. Mm-hmm. And as you can imagine, it's a complicated problem to figure out who might be the best to spread information about a new seed variety. Government extension workers simply may not have the best information on that. And then second, farmers themselves have no real incentive to kind of spread the word about something new. Even if they liked growing the seed, they don't have any financial motivation to talk to others about experience. Yeah. And recent experimental work has pointed to both of these as potential limitations.
In the UK where I am, or the US where you are, then farmers wouldn't really expect a visit from the government to talk to them about new seeds. They would take advice from the dealers that they work with. Why have we assumed that this approach just wouldn't work in low-income countries?
I think we still do expect a fair amount of word of mouth communication to happen in developed countries, say the UK or the US. Mm-hmm. But the key difference here is that the private companies are much more active in the development of new seed products.
Right.
And as a result of this, they deliver their products through a network of seed dealers. These seed dealers are often local. They provide customized advice to farmers, and sometimes it's based on actual data, characteristics of farmers' land. Thus, it's quite natural for seed companies to use dealers as information intermediaries in that context. And this is quite different with the usual experience in less developed countries, where national agricultural research systems are the ones releasing these new seed varieties. And then the public sector extension takes over from there. And the very reasonable intuition is that to get information to farmers, the best thing to do is to go to farmers directly. There's often this view that seed dealers might not give the right information or that they're too geographically sparse to reach enough farmers. But it mostly has to do with how seeds are developed and raised, most often by international research organizations rather than private seed companies.
But in your experiments, this is exactly what you did, isn't it? You wanted to see if seed dealers in one part of India could accelerate the adoption of a new type of rice. How did you set up the experiment to investigate this?
Yeah, let me try and give you the quick rundown here. We started with 72 rural blocks in the coastal belt of Orissa in eastern India. And we did want to do exactly what you said, which was to contrast conventional public sector agricultural extension with an approach that expands the role of agro dealers. And one thing to keep in mind is we needed to do this with a technology that we felt comfortable was actually profitable for farmers. And so with this in mind, we went with a flood-tolerant rice variety called Swarna Sub 1. This technology, Swarna Sub 1, was first released in India in 2009. In a previous randomized control trial, it was found to increase farmer profits through greater protection from flooding. And so what we did is we randomly divided the blocks into two groups of 36. And in that first group, we did as much as we could to replicate business as usual government extension methods. And this involved partnering with the government service and helping to support their activities. Most importantly, we came in with 200 kilograms of demonstration seed packets. We call these mini kits and had the government extension worker distribute those mini kits to their chosen contract farmers. And the reality is that farmers like to try something in small quantities. And so these type of mini kits allow for that. But our main goal was really to compare this business as usual control to a modified approach. And that modified approach in the other 36 blocks is where we took the same amount of seed and went straight to the seed dealers. This is around 4 to 5 dealers per block where we provided these seeds. They usually tested them on their own fields because dealers in this context are farmers, which works in our advantage. And often they gave some of these seeds to their trusted customers for trial, really in a way of sort of testing and learning. We didn't do anything beyond this. We really wanted to make the experiment a simple comparison between this approach that tried to put better information in the hands of seed dealers with investing more in the traditional methods that government extension services use.
And that's quite a hands-off treatment. You're basically leaving those dealers to do what they wish. Now, one concern, obviously, is what they wish is what's most profitable for them rather than what's best for the farmers that they work with. Was there anything in the design of the experiment to make sure that this didn't happen?
Yes, indeed. We recognize that careful attention needs to be paid to the incentives that may or may not be in place for a seed dealer to market a given technology to farmers. These are business people after all, right? And one contextual detail works in our favor in this case. It turns out that in the state of Orissa, seed dealers buy seeds mostly from the state-run seed corporation that fixes the retail and wholesale prices across the different varieties that a dealer could sell. And what this means is that the markup between price and cost doesn't vary across the different rice varieties. In other words, the business motivation to sell Swarna Sub 1 by a dealer is exactly the same as the business motivation to sell another variety, other than just selling a larger quantity. Mm-hmm. It's really not because the margin on each kilogram sold is higher. And so this feature of the context lets us focus on other reasons why it might be profitable for a dealer to suggest Swarna Sub 1 to farmers. And what we really had in mind here is that dealers can expand their business by giving good advice that both keeps farmers coming back year after year, as well as helps them get more farmers in a given year.
Well, it makes intuitive sense, but did it work? What was the effect in the first year? And what about years after that?
So what we did is we went back during the next rice growing season, which was in 2017, which seems like a long time ago.
Yes.
And did a survey. We were interested to see which rice varieties farmers were using. We found that 6.3% of farmers had adopted Swarna Sub-1 in the 36 blocks where we took the conventional agricultural extension approach. But interestingly, this went up by over 50% to almost 10%, 9.8% of farmers in the blocks where we had intervened with agro dealers a year earlier. And the data shows something else, which I think is quite interesting, which is we find that the agro dealer approach increased adoption of Swarna Sub-1 only for the farmers that were in areas where flooding is more frequent. And as you recall, the technology works better for farmers that are more exposed to flooding. Mm-hmm. So that's one benefit of this dealer route, is that technology seems to be more likely to get used by the farmers that can benefit the most from it. And in terms of persistence, since you asked about sort of long-term effects, we used some different data to investigate that. We looked at 3 years of administrative data on adoption of different rice varieties by seed growers. Now, these are farmers that grow rice to be sold as seed rather than grain as for consumption, but they're still farmers. And what we found is that seed growers in the treatment blocks were producing more Swarna Sub-1 during the 3 years after the treatment. We didn't really find any evidence that the effect was disappearing over time.
One thing I really liked about the paper is you sent secret shoppers to the seed dealers to find out why they were recommending the new variety. And that data about how there was higher adoption in areas affected by floods, it seemed to imply that there is discussion going on there, that there is something happening here. What did you discover?
I think this was for sure the most fun part of the project, when you have a result and you really want to dig deeper and really understand what's going on. So 2 years after the treatment, we did send these secret shoppers to ask advice from dealers in all blocks about what rice varieties to grow. Somebody walked in and said, "Hey, going to grow some rice. What are the good new varieties?" And what we found is that dealers in the treatment blocks were more likely to mention Swarna Sub-1 in these discussions with secret shoppers. And interestingly, it's the same dealers that mention it. They're also the ones that currently have it in stock. So what the intervention seems to be doing is to simultaneously move the needle on dealers passing information to farmers, as well as putting the variety on their shelves. And this makes sense, again, because dealers are looking to make money. Their motivation in passing information to farmers is to make a sale.
Is there also the implication here that if they're giving good advice to farmers and farmers are doing well and they're building their business that way, that reputation can be a mechanism to help this process along, even as you say, whilst the prices are fixed, so there is no direct financial incentive?
Yeah, we think that's an important consideration when thinking about the role of agro dealers in the supply of information. Agro dealers are local. They usually sell in their village and surrounding villages. Farmers can become aware if a dealer provides advice that repeatedly leads to better outcomes. And at the same time, dealers want to keep farmers coming back over time. Thus, the existing seed market puts in place incentives for a dealer to give farmer-specific advice. In our case, again, we see dealers passing information even when they could get the same profit margin from another seed variety, as you just mentioned. While we can't say for sure with our study, we think that the desire to keep customers happy is probably one of the motivating factors. And in some ways, this is similar to when, say, you or I would obtain advice from a trusted supplier of a particular good or service, say an auto mechanic who we buy services from repeatedly over time. The key thing about our context is that the incentives seem to align for seed dealers to promote varieties that are good for farmers.
So here's the big question, Kyle. On this evidence, might it be more efficient to take all these agricultural extension programs, hundreds of them all over the developing world, and switch them to focus on dealers rather than these demonstration farmers that they tend to use at the moment?
Yeah, this is one where we have to be a bit cautious, because our study doesn't quite tell us about a scenario where visits to farmers are entirely removed from agricultural extension. After all, the normal extension activities would have happened regardless of our experiment in these 72 blocks. They still took place in all blocks. Instead, what we learn is we learn something about two different ways to increase investment in agricultural extension. In particular, we find that allocating those additional resources to a more agro-dealer-based approach seems to be more effective than allocating them to more of the traditional public sector methods. An agro-dealer approach is also desirable in terms of cost, simply because agro-dealers are fewer in number. compared to reaching out to more farmers. In our case, we only intervened with 4 to 5 dealers per block. In contrast, we distributed 40 seed mini kits in the control blocks. And it's simply cheaper to help 4 to 5 people learn rather than going all over the place to reach 40. Thus, we think that making agro dealers, you know, better informed can indeed do that, increase adoption at lower cost compared to these more standard approaches.
It's a terrific good news story. And with all the news that we're hearing now about food prices and climate change, one hopes that people around the world listening to what you have to say. Carl, thank you very much for talking about it today.
Thanks, Tim. I appreciate it.
The paper is called Private Input Suppliers as Information Agents for Technology Adoption in Agriculture. It is discussion paper 15584 at CEPR if you want to find it that way. The authors are Carl Emmerich, Alain de Jonfry, Elizabeth Sadoulet, Manzor Dar and Eleanor Wiseman. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode of Vox Dev Talks is to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. But remember, you can always find all our past episodes at voxdev.org, where there are articles about the papers that we feature in our episodes.